This is Diz.
And this is...
Trigger Warning.
So today we have a disaster story for you. This is, I'm sure you've read the title of the episode because that's what it's there for, but this is about the Surfside condo collapse.
Oh, man.
And so we're going to start with some trigger warnings. This has mention of child death in it and possible animal deaths as well.
So sad.
So I guess it's kind of a long one, so I'll just get into it here.
Settle in, friends.
Yeah. Okay, so Michael Stratton, age 66, was on a business trip to Washington, D.C. on June 24th, 2021, when his wife Cassie called him. Cassie Stratton was 40. She was at home in Miami, Florida, and she called him around 1:20 in the morning saying that their condo building was shaking. She said that a sinkhole had formed where the condo's pool had been, which had collapsed into the underground parking garage. He was still on the phone with her when the line went dead. Technically, it just went quiet.
Right.
There was just nothing.
Right. It's not like it wasn't a landline.
Right.
Okay.
Cassie Stratton was one of 98 victims that died when their oceanfront condo partially collapsed. Champlain Towers South was a 13-story building consisting of 136 condos, a pool, and an underground parking garage, in Surfside, Florida, a community that was north of Miami. At 1:22 a.m. on June 24th, 2021, one portion of the building collapsed, pancaking 12 floors, one on top of the other. Raquel Oliveira was visiting her mother in Colorado when the building collapsed, and it killed her husband and five-year-old son. In 2024, she said, quote, "Time is so relative. 3 years for many things seems a very long time, and still I feel like it was today that I got the news that I never return home and never see my family again. I'm still processing the thought I traveled one day and I will never return home." And there are many stories that are similar, stories from survivors and witnesses, stories of people waiting to hear about their loved ones in the days and weeks after the collapse. Sergio Lozano lived in the tower across from his parents. The building was like L-shaped and he lived in one part of the L. They lived in the other part.
Okay.
His parents were Antonio and Gladys Lozano. He woke to the sound of the collapse and looked out the window and told his wife, "It's not there. My parents' apartment is not there. It's gone." Adriana LaFont picked up her two kids from their dad's condo on June 23rd, just hours before the collapse. Her ex-husband, Michael LaFont, was found dead in the rubble. So her kids would have been there that night if it had been his night. They were divorced, and so she picked them up that night before. Otherwise, their kids would have been there.
I'm sorry. I just don't even have words right now.
I know. Anna Ortiz was 46 years old and had just married Frank Kleiman, 55. They lived in Champlain Tower South along with Anna's son, 26-year-old Luis Bermudez, who was in a wheelchair due to a lifelong battle with muscular dystrophy. The mother and son were found together, and her family says she likely ran to him because she was, quote, always his protector. Anna's brother-in-law, Jay Kleiman, was killed in the disaster along with Jay and Frank's mother, Nancy Levin. Nancy Levin had lived in the building since 1981 and was once the vice president of the condo association board. In 2019, she and the then president of the board resigned due to frustration with objections regarding repairs needed to recertify the building. And this leads us to the disaster. So what caused the building to collapse so unexpectedly, so suddenly? And it turns out that it wasn't sudden. In 2018, Morabito Consultants Incorporated did a field survey of the building and issued a report to the Condominium Association's board. The report sheds light on issues the building had and the repairs needed to make it structurally sound again. So, they discovered that some residents were experiencing flooding into the inner space of their houses or condos during hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
This was due to the lack of proper flashing at the sill. I guess it was some kind of sealant. Of the balcony sliding glass doors and windows.
Okay.
They made recommendations to repair that. Units 209 and up, the windows and doors for the balcony were not installed properly. So Morabito recommended complete removal of the balcony doors and windows and replacement with newly fabricated ones that fit properly. So basically every balcony window door needed to be replaced.
From the second floor all the way up.
Yeah. But the other ones still, like, some of them weren't doing what they were supposed to do because I guess the sealant had worn away.
How do you install them wrong?
I don't know. I think it was like maybe cut to the wrong size. Most of the balconies of the units were covered with tile or some other kind of flooring, which made it difficult for them to check the top side of the balcony structure itself. But in several places, they had found that tiles were cracked, which actually signified structural damage to the balcony slabs, the concrete slabs. Without first repairing them, a waterproofing membrane could not be installed. They found that the edges of the concrete slabs were also cracking and spalling, which is, I guess, a construction or concrete term for chipping or fragmenting.
Okay.
The cracks and the chips can be a common source of water infiltration, which leads to deterioration of the concrete itself.
Right.
And the soffits, which is the underside of the balcony, of about half of them, showed evidence of deterioration as well.
So water was getting all the way through.
The cracks and stuff, the water was actually able to get into the concrete. So their recommendation was to remove all the balcony tiles, repair the damaged concrete slabs for all of them, install a waterproofing membrane to the tops of each one, and then they said that if they did all this, then the railings would no longer meet the minimum guardrail height of 42 inches required by state building codes. So the railings would have to be replaced as well.
So basically they needed all nude balconies.
Yeah, essentially. Because once they repaired the concrete, like took all the tiling and stuff off, repaired the concrete, put down the waterproof membrane, and then put tiles back on it, then the railings wouldn't be
too low.
The right height.
Right.
Yeah.
For safety.
Yeah. The underside of the second floor where the entrance to the underground parking garage was, there's like one section that kind of overhangs where the underground parking garage you go under.
Okay.
Had several areas of deteriorated black plywood. And along with these, they also found this was the case at several light fixtures. And they were concerned that mold could exist above these areas, which could cause deterioration of the support framing. They recommended the complete replacement of the suspended entryway. So the entire concrete.
So the whole building entryway needed to be knocked down and rebuilt is what it sounds like.
There was a lot, yeah. The exterior windows of the entire building were nearing the end of their functional lifespan. So they suggested that they be replaced with the impact resistant ones. The building had a stucco facade, which was cracking. And they reported that it needed to be repaired because it could also allow water to enter. They noticed that there were not enough safety features or not appropriate safety features for placement for, like, people who were doing window washing or anybody that needed to be, you know, because they suspend down from the building to clean the windows and stuff. And they didn't have the appropriate safety features that were recommended for window washers or anybody doing maintenance on the outside of the condo. They found that the waterproofing below the pool deck and the entrance drive was beyond its useful life and must be completely removed and replaced. They reported that the failed waterproofing was causing major structural damage to the concrete slab below those areas.
Oh my gosh.
They warned the board that failure to replace the waterproofing in the, quote, near future would cause the deterioration of the concrete to, quote, expand exponentially. Finally, they also observed that many of the previous repairs to the concrete in the garage was failing. The cracks had been injected with epoxy resin and were showing new cracking radiating from the original repair. And they said that the previous repairs were not effective in properly fixing the cracking and spalling. And they recommended that the distressed concrete slabs be completely removed and replaced. So this was the parking garage. Yeah. Keep in mind, this is the parking garage. So this is the concrete slabs that the ceiling of the garage makes the floor the foundation of where the condos sit.
Right.
Because the parking garage is directly under the condos. So basically, 4 years before the collapse in 2018, this inspection showed cosmetic and structural defects that needed repair. Morabito Consultants' estimate of the repairs in 2018 was $9 million.
Oh my gosh.
Side note, before the collapse, or at the time of the collapse, the Condominium Association Board had approved an assessment that detailed $15 million in repairs. So they had like worked on the approval process, they got it approved, but it wasn't until like 2020 that they got it approved, apparently. Or they didn't start the process till 2020, so 2 years after the report, and they hadn't started the repairs yet in 2021. So, let's fast forward to 2 weeks, 2 days before the collapse.
Okay.
On June 8th, 2021, a junior engineer was called in to inspect part of the pool deck of the building. He was there to look at a large concrete planter. And planter is basically like a big concrete box that holds plants.
Plants,
I mean,
right.
That's essentially all it is.
Pretty
it was a big
plants.
Plant pot, yeah.
Yeah.
These were shaped in an L, or one side of it that was kind of shaped in an L. So he took photos of this one side of the planter.
Mm-hmm.
At the corner where the little part and the long part meet,
mm-hmm.
they're perpendicular to each other. There's an obvious break between them.
Okay.
The long portion of the wall is actually sitting about 3 centimeters higher than the shorter portion.
Okay.
Even though they're built to be flush.
Right.
So it has a crack also running horizontally across the entire length, almost, of the long planter, the long part of the planter. So a crack that's a little bit wider at the intersection of the L.
Uh-huh.
And then it slims down to where it's completely closed at the far end. So it's almost like a wedge. It's open more at the end where the two meet.
Okay.
And then it almost is cracked to the back, but not quite to the back end of the long piece. So the vertical displacement and the crack, the vertical displacement is that 3 centimeter height difference.
Uh-huh.
And the crack being kind of wedge-shaped is evidence that the structure that's holding it up is sagging.
That makes sense.
Yes. And I'm going to include a link to a YouTube video in our show notes because this dude, the channel for this YouTube link, it's called Building Integrity, and the host is a guy named Josh Porter, and he explains this so clearly. He has the pictures. He's explaining how it works because I know nothing about structural engineering.
Right.
But he made it like
super simple.
Oh my gosh, duh.
Like, duh.
Like, yeah, really easy to understand.
Uh-huh.
So
I will definitely check
that
out.
Yeah, I encourage
as well.
Anybody that's like, what is she saying, this kooky woman? So yeah, go find the YouTube video that I linked in the show notes. He'll explain it to you. Anyway, so the junior engineer that took these photos assumed, I'm guessing since nothing was done about it, that he assumed that the crack in the concrete and the displacement of the longer portion of the wall was due to roots intruding from the plants inside the planter. Usually, though, as Josh Porter points out, when plants, like when the roots start intruding, mm-hmm. they push the wall out.
Out, because that's the way they're growing.
Not crack it from, because the crack is maybe 12 inches from the bottom.
Oh, wow.
And running horizontally. Obviously, there would be, if there was actual plant matter coming through, it would show that. Like,
right.
You would see dirt,
at least
plants.
Dirt coming through
yeah.
where the roots are growing.
Exactly. So, that apparently the junior engineer thought that it was something from the plants. And then, in the YouTube video, he points out, the photo also shows a distortion in what should be straight lines in the tiles on the ground in front of the wall.
Oh.
So when he traced the lines of the tiles,
you can see that
you could
they're...
tell that they were actually like bent just slightly. They were a little off center, and it was an evidence that that part was sagging. But as my new favorite YouTuber said, this slight sloping of the ground could have been designed intentionally this way to allow rainwater to drain.
That makes sense.
And there were actually 2 drains in that general area for that. But the sloping of the ground and the vertical displacement of that wall
mm-hmm.
is more of like, uh-oh,
a
something's going
issue.
On. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Now we're going to go back in time again a little bit.
Okay.
So that was June 8th, 2021, that he took pictures of the planter.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he did not go down to the garage, even though that's exactly, that was directly underneath the pool deck.
Yeah, because it was just plants.
Yeah, apparently it was just plants. For him, so. So, in November 2020, so this is 2 years after Mirabito did their inspection,
uh-huh.
6 months before the, yeah, about 6 or 7
before
months before the collapse.
Uh-huh.
There is another photo taken of a support column and the underground parking garage. And Josh Porter, the YouTube genius,
uh-huh.
explains the evidence in the photo way better than I can. But to sum it up, there's proof that support column number 76 was showing signs of punch shearing.
That sounds horrible.
And punch shearing is basically what it sounds like. If you have, say, a sheet of paper, and you have it balanced on the tip of a pencil.
Okay.
Or on a pencil. And somehow the sheet of paper gets too heavy. Or the pencil starts falling apart or whatever. And it just slowly pushes up through the paper.
Oh,
because the paper
okay.
is sagging.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming down. That's punch shearing. It's basically the support columns were going through the concrete slab that they were supposed to be supporting.
Is this right?
Because the concrete slab was deteriorating and coming down.
And this is right underneath that planter.
This is underneath. It's in the parking garage, and I think it was not directly underneath, but on one side where that the tiles were showing signs.
Okay.
It was kind of past the drains, but it was right there.
Okay.
So it would have been definitely affected by.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So the entire support column was wet.
Oh, no.
Now, when it rains or whatever, like, there can be dripping and stuff like that, but the whole support column was wet. And there was a puddle of water at the bottom.
Dang, that's a lot of water.
Yeah. On the upper right side of the column in the picture, you can see an opening, and there is, like, streaks where the water had come through.
Mm-hmm.
And calcium carbonate, which I think might be a product, like a white powder that's a breakdown maybe of concrete. I'm not sure. He didn't really explain that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was rust running down. So rust is proving that the steel rebar.
Yeah.
Rebar is short for reinforcement bars, essentially.
Imagine that.
Yeah. The steel rebar was rusting.
So water was obviously continuously. Yeah.
So the rebar and the concrete above is deteriorating. The rust shows that the steel is corroded. And the rebar, of course, is installed during construction to provide added support to concrete slabs. Most concrete structures are made with rebar built in.
Yeah.
Because the concrete itself is not usually sufficient.
It's like bones for the concrete to fill.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe
it. Yeah, it's just extra in case something happens extra with support. The concrete. Yeah. So the rebar is degraded, the concrete is, which is evident by the calcium carbonate running down the column,
mm-hmm.
settling in the puddle below, then that means the structural integrity of the building is compromised.
No kidding.
He didn't mention any other pictures of this, like of other posts or support columns mm-hmm. like this, but I mean, even one supporting that much weight.
That's insane.
Yeah. So 6 months after that photo was taken, and 2 weeks after the picture of the damaged planter was taken, Champlain Tower South collapsed, and it killed 98 people. In the hours after the collapse, 35 people were pulled from the rubble alive. Stacy Fang was 54 years old. She was rescued and taken to a nearby hospital, where she actually died a few hours later. That made her the official first victim of the collapse.
Oh, okay.
Her 15-year-old son, Jonah Handler, was near her. He was rescued and he survived. The only people to be found alive were in the first few hours after the collapse. That was it. The search would keep going for a month, and they pulled more and more people out, but nobody was found alive after the first day. There was one person, a firefighter, had said that he could hear her voice, but he couldn't get to her. And by the time they found her, she was dead. The collapse of the building was mainly what's called a pancake collapse,
mm-hmm.
which is the most deadly type. Pancake collapses are exactly what they sound like. Each floor collapses onto the one beneath it, which creates basically more that that floor has to hold up, and it can't, so it collapses onto the one beneath
it. And then keeps collapsing.
Yeah. And it's called that because it stacks like pancakes.
Right, makes sense.
And it's deadly because the nature of it means that there are very few pockets or areas where a person can survive.
Yeah.
Like it's air flat. Pockets or just air. Yeah, it's just slab after slab after slab. So it's hard when that happens to find survivors. It. Yeah, it's hard to survive. On June 26th, it was announced that there was actually a fire under the rubble, but by the 27th, it was considered controlled. Another reason why the pancake collapses are so dangerous is because any remaining structure is considered extremely unstable.
Right.
So that threatens the lives of first responders and rescuers on site.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, the rescue operation for Champlain Tower South had to be paused at 4 p.m. on Saturday, July 3rd. So the remaining portion of the building could be demolished. The residents from that part of the building were evacuated immediately after the initial collapse. Many protested the demolition due to concerns about pets they had been forced to leave behind. According to the articles I read, rescuers went through the remaining building, they checked for pets, and they pulled out any animals they came across. There was actually one cat, Binks, that showed up a couple days after the demolition and was reunited with his family. So I hope that they legit did look for
every single
pets.
Pet. Yeah.
Because cats and dogs, they hide. But
right.
The people that were in the building that had pets, the part that actually collapsed, you know their pets were gone.
Right.
And that hurts my heart, too. So
we're not going to talk too much about that.
No, we're not. Because I can't handle that trigger.
Mm-mm.
Either way, the demolition of the building, the remaining structure of the building, was completed on July 4th around 10:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of areas near there canceled their 4th of July celebrations.
Right.
In honor of the victims and stuff. Because, I mean,
how can you celebrate when?
Yeah. And, I mean, this was several days. June has, what, 30 days. So, the 24th, so a week, 7 to 10 days.
Yeah.
And they're still looking. Rescue efforts resumed almost immediately after the demolition, even though the demolition happened at 10:30 p.m.
Wow.
There were pauses over the next couple of days because of lightning and high winds from Tropical Storm Elsa.
Florida, yeah.
Yeah. Luckily, there were no injuries from Elsa, so the rescue operation continued. On July 7th, the day after the storm passed, they found 18 more bodies, which brought the total to 54.
Oh my gosh.
There was a moment of silence at 7:15 p.m., on July 7th, to recognize the transition from rescue to recovery, as it was not expected that anyone would still be alive in the wreckage at that point. At 1:20 a.m. on July 8th, there was another moment of silence, recognizing 2 weeks exactly since the disaster happened.
Oh my gosh.
The recovery operation ended on July 23rd, 2021, so a full month after the collapse. It was the longest non-hurricane-related disaster recovery effort in Florida's history.
Oh my gosh.
On Monday, July 26, 2021, officials announced that they had identified the last victim as Estelle Hedaya, age 54. So although the rescue and recovery effort lasted for over a month, the question of what happened and what caused it started immediately, of course.
Right.
The National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, began its investigation immediately after the disaster. And as the rubble was removed, it was relocated so that the NIST could use it as evidence to search for the cause of the collapse.
Sure.
And the NIST over the years has actually kept releasing updates on their progress and everything. Their final report isn't due until spring of 2026.
What?
Yeah.
I guess that's a ton of stuff they have to go through.
Yeah. So NIST and the Miami Herald, you know, have released information. The Miami Herald actually won a Pulitzer Prize for their investigative reporting for this.
Wow.
Yeah. And they had a presentation that was put together that I've also linked in the notes that is very interesting, very spectacular.
Really?
Yeah. It shows everything beforehand, explains how it was structurally, you know, positioned or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or how it impacted it. It showed, like, victims and how the collapse happened and the lead up to the collapse and, like, anything. Wow. So, yeah. So the pool deck, which was at the ground level and sat atop the underground garage, mm-hmm. collapsed a few minutes before the rest of the building. A report from the NIST in March 2024 said that the structural integrity of the pool deck was compromised from the beginning. The building was constructed in the late 70s and completed in 1981. It was reported that the design and construction of some parts of the structure didn't meet standard building code requirements at the time. So it didn't meet the building codes for the 70s and 80s either.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. So that one lady had been living there since it was open. Yeah. Since it was available.
Yeah.
Wow.
So not meeting the building codes, this was particularly true of the pool deck and the support columns of the tower.
That's right, because the lady who called her husband,
Cassie, like, yeah.
There was a sinkhole.
She said, yeah, she thought it was a sinkhole. Yeah, where the pool deck basically collapsed. Yeah. So according to reporting from CNN, quote, deficiencies were found in the building's steel reinforcement placements, concrete alignment and strength of the columns, and floor concrete. Officials noted several areas of the pool deck had, quote, severe strength deficiencies. So, leading up to the collapse, possibly as early as 3 weeks before, there were reports from residents of knocking and hammering sounds. According to the NIST's report, these sounds may have been signs of severe distress, and they could have been signs that the concrete slab reinforcements were fracturing. So the presentation from the NIST, and I think this was from March of 2024, said that there's also evidence that the pool deck's concrete slab was sagging, exposed to water, and corroded in some areas. The large landscaping planters, the ones I mentioned before.
Yeah.
Had also become weighed down over time because they'd had more filling than they were originally designed for. So they would just add soil and stuff like that and replace it. Yeah.
They just kept adding to it.
Right. So that increased the load on the concrete slab, made it heavier than what it had been calculated to hold when the building was designed.
Mm-hmm.
So the NIST says that between these extra loads and the deficient construction, a situation was created that allowed for, quote, critically low margins against failure. So basically they're like, you're giving yourself not a lot of margin for error there.
Yeah.
You know. So the investigation's still ongoing. They can't yet rule out some sort of structural failure elsewhere that could have triggered the collapse. Because most people are thinking, okay, the pool deck and stuff collapsed first. It must have been something there.
Mm-hmm.
The parking garage or whatever, but they were like, they can't say for sure yet that there wasn't something in the tower itself that caused things to be off and that shifted the load of the building in a way that then made the pool deck collapse.
Okay.
So, cause they have to, I mean, they have to go through
all the stuff. I understand that they have to, but,
So they said they are still reviewing evidence to determine if the support columns on the southern edge of the tower could have given way first, which caused the distribution of the weight to shift, which then brought the building down. And they say the columns could have been compromised due to corrosion, water exposure, and poor installation. Aside from these theories, they're still investigating the possibility that the foundation settled unevenly, or that the building was constructed on ground that developed sinkholes or other weaknesses. So, like, it was constructed on earth that just couldn't support it, and that's what happened, instead of it being the building itself. So they're still investigating all of this.
Oh my gosh.
They said that's less likely, but they still have to look into it anyway.
Absolutely.
The NIST did an update in September 2024 and said that they're diligently investigating, and they've examined and tested over 1,000 pieces of evidence from the site. They still have more to do. According to the NIST website, because you can actually look it up and look up the collapse, and they have updates, they also investigated 9/11.
Okay.
The technical work, quote, the technical work still underway includes reviewing records, assessing the material properties of various parts of the building, analyzing concrete durability and aging, characterizing reinforcing steel corrosion, assessing any potential geotechnical contributors to the failure, completing computational models that account for soil structure interaction, conducting the remaining structural tests, incorporating as-built data into existing models, and running simulations of computer collapse models. So they're not doing anything.
Gosh, they're just sitting there, twiddling their thumbs.
Yeah. So apparently, I mean, the fact that they actually release updates without, like, people pushing and be like, hey, are y'all still looking at this? You know, they're releasing updates regularly. Mm-hmm. They're still investigating. But, of course, other people have opinions.
Of course.
And other scientists have weighed in on what they think might have happened, or at least what contributed to the collapse if mm-hmm. it didn't cause it. Some scientists believe that climate change could be a factor. A former maintenance manager at Champlain Tower South from 1995 to 2000, his name's William Espinoza, spoke of instances when salt water came in through the bottom of the foundation.
Oh my gosh.
He said this happened particularly when there were king tides. And king tides are a term used to describe high tides that are higher than normal. They occur during full or new moons, or when the moon or the moon and the sun are closest to the earth. So when the moon and sun line up, their gravitational pull causes higher tides.
King tide sounds really cool, though, I have to say.
Yeah. So according to William Espinoza, there were two large pumps that were used to pump out the seawater, but the pumps could never keep up with the amount of water that was there during these tides and stuff.
Wow.
So with climate change, as the height of the ocean increases, the king tides will increase as well.
That makes sense.
And eventually a normal high tide will reach levels that the king tides reach now. And the king tides now cause flooding in coastal areas. And you can Google king tides and coastal flooding, and you'll see cars just driving down obvious, like, beach roads that are just covered in water.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So these are, they also call them sunny day flooding because there's no rain. It's just the tide as it's higher.
Wow.
Sea levels rose as high as 3.9 inches, which is 9.9 centimeters, between 2000 and 2017. So in 17 years, the sea rose, it varied depending on where you were, but about 3.9 inches or 9.9 centimeters.
Oh, wow.
It's estimated that by 2040... the seas will rise between 10 and 17 inches, or 25 to 43 centimeters, above what they were in 2000.
Woo!
Yeah.
That's quite a bit.
And this is the water that we can see.
Right.
According to scientists, groundwater levels have increased as well and become more salty as the ocean rises and infiltrates soil that's further inland. And it was pointed out by one specific scientist that if the buildings, not just the one that collapsed, but buildings in general, if they need pumps to force out excess water, then that means their foundation is underwater.
Yeah.
So the constant ebb and flow of the water on the bedrock beneath the buildings can also cause issues. Actually, after the tower collapsed, they found a large hole under the building that could have been caused by a saltwater intrusion, like a where something collapsed and opened up. Because the rock can collapse. That's how caves are created.
Right.
Yeah. Some people believe that the saltwater intrusion and corrosion of the building's foundation caused the buildings to collapse. Other people believe it may not have been a major cause, but it likely contributed. And then others believe that it probably didn't cause the collapse at all, but that it should at least be a warning sign of what climate change can do, and that it could cause coastal buildings all over the place to have issues,
mm-hmm.
and that it's a warning sign and a trigger for us to be like, hey, we need to get ahead of this now.
Mm-hmm.
And just a side note, because I found this interesting, I tried not to go down a climate change rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But a separate study found that dozens of condos, hotels, and other buildings in Florida are sinking at a fairly alarming rate. Some of this is normal after construction because the ground settles due to the weight of the building,
mm-hmm.
and engineers account for that. But according to the study done at the University of Miami, 35 buildings have sunk more than 3 inches between 2016 and 2023.
Wow.
And the sinking isn't really like part of the collapse, but if the ground is sinking and the oceans are rising, it just shows that that's an even bigger problem.
There could be a big issue. Yeah.
Although the NIST investigation's not complete, the families of the 98 victims settled lawsuits very early on in 21 and 22. A record-breaking $1 billion settlement was reached to compensate the families.
Wow.
Most of the money will be paid to family members who lost loved ones. About $100 million is being set aside for legal fees. And $96 million will be paid to people who owned one of the 136 units in the building. Because condos you buy. They're like apartments, but you purchase them like a house.
Mm-hmm.
So the people, even in the uncollapsed part, their house was gone.
Yeah.
They couldn't live there anymore. So they were all compensated for the cost of their homes, basically. Yeah. The money's actually being paid out by insurance companies, engineering companies, the condo association board, I believe, and a luxury condo building that was being built next door. Because the residents complained that the construction of the condo next door would make their building shake. And so, keep in mind, this was right after the collapse, 2021, 2022. So they wondered if the vibrations contributed to the collapse of Champlain Tower South.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So even that luxury condo next door paid out.
Wow.
Yeah. None of the parties that have agreed to pay admitted any wrongdoing. But they were praised by the judge and everything for making the settlement happen quickly instead of extending the disaster by drawing out litigation proceedings that could have taken years and years.
Right.
So now, by the time the NIST investigation has released its report, it looks like almost 5 years would have gone by. The youngest victim of the collapse was a one-year-old child. By now, she'd be able, like, about to go to kindergarten. One couple was staying in the condo for one night in a condo owned by her family. They were killed. One man was visiting from California, so if he hadn't been visiting, he wouldn't have died. Many lives would have 5 more years of memories and dreams, and instead an incalculable number of people have had 5 years of heartache. That's the story of Champlain Tower South, the Surfside condo collapse. And I'm going to include the names of the victims in the show notes, because I'm not going to take the time to say them all, but 98 people went to bed that night, to go to sleep, and their building, their home, just fell down around them.
And then you have all of their family members left afterwards,
too. All their family, that one lady that was visiting her mom in Colorado, and her husband and her 5-year-old son both died.
And the guy that
she
lived
actually
on one side
has been traveling and doing speaking, like, for people who have lost loved ones and stuff like that. There were a couple of girls from Canada, I think, on vacation or something like that. There were, entire families, little kids.
Yeah.
Just wiped out. Just gone. One of the firefighters that was there, his 7-year-old daughter was killed. The First Lady of Panama, her sister, I believe it was, and her family were killed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There were a lot of people that it was families that lived there. The one gentleman who looked out his apartment window and was like, "Mom and Dad's apartment is gone."
Yeah.
There was one couple who was getting ready to move.
Really?
Yeah. And the man on the phone with his wife.
Can you imagine?
I can't even.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And to not even, because if he's thinking, she's like, "Oh, it's a sinkhole. The pool fell into a sinkhole." He's not thinking.
Right.
The entire building's coming down, or the half of the building's coming down.
And I wonder if he thought when he was like, "Hello," and she wasn't there anymore, it's like, "Oh, I wonder if it caused damage to a phone line or
tower,
like,
or whatever."
Yeah. Something like that. And like, how long did it take for him to realize she was gone?
Yeah.
You know. And then people, they gathered at a community center, like, just down the street, where they were hanging up posters of, "This person's still missing, this person's still missing," you know. Because there were, like, when it first started out, it was like 159 people unaccounted for.
Wow.
And so every day the death toll would go up and the number unaccounted for would go down a little bit. And I can't imagine the person who waited and their mom, sister, whatever, was the very last lady that they identified. That's got to be hard.
Well,
it's like,
knowing
everybody else is getting answers, why aren't we?
Right.
Until finally, she was the last one.
So did it say the people who actually survived, were they on the very top floors?
The Miami Herald, the thing that I linked that showed their presentation, showed like a couple of different things, because the pool deck, like I said, collapsed about 7 minutes prior to the rest of the building.
Uh-huh.
So there was a woman and her two, like, kids. They were, I think, like 13 and 15. So, like, teens. Because, I mean, this is 1:20 in the morning. Not a lot of people are up.
Right. Everyone's asleep.
The mom had heard sounds that she thought was somebody hammering, like they were remodeling in the middle of the night. So she left her apartment. I think she was first floor. So right above the garage. So she left and went to the security guard that was there and was like, somebody's hammering. I don't know what's going on. And the security guard's like, neither do I, you know? Well, that's when the pool deck collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So the mom's talking to the security guard. So she runs to the other end of the lobby and looks out at where the sound came from. And is like, oh my God, the pool, you know, like
just it fell into a hole.
It just fell.
Yeah.
So she runs back to head towards her, back to her condo because her kids are there. And the kids meet her saying that there was dust and stuff coming in through the balcony and that they couldn't get the doors to shut. Well, if they couldn't get the doors to shut, that's because already the concrete was bowing. Like, starting to, like, sag because there was nothing supporting it as much now. Like, it was at the point of collapse. So they ran and ran out. The security guard was like, I didn't feel like it was right for me to leave yet. So the security guard, she starts trying to call people to say, get out. And that's when the building collapsed. One lady who was on, like, the sixth floor had heard a sound. And she had, like, a 2-foot crack in her wall. And she was like, nope. So she wasn't in her apartment. There was a couple that was coming home from dinner. I guess it was like a late night. It's Miami, so.
Right, you know, everything's open.
Nightlife, you know? Yeah. So they were coming in, and they parked in the parking garage and came up from the elevator. And they came out at the same time the first lady with the two teenagers was talking to the security guard and stuff, and the pool deck collapsed. So they came out of the elevator, and right there is where the front door, like, of the lobby and uh-huh. the security guard was. So they just said, nope, and they noped on out. They left. Well, after the building collapsed, the security guard and the woman from the sixth floor were trying to get out, and they couldn't go out the front door because of debris.
Uh-huh.
So they ended up climbing out through, like, where the pool area had been and climbing over rubble to get out. And the presentation that the Miami Herald did, it was chilling because it's this thing, you're scrolling through, and as you scroll through, words come up that show, like, explain what you're looking at and stuff like that. Well, what they did was as they scrolled, they would say, like, a person's camera in their living room on this floor caught dust and stuff falling from the ceiling before the collapse. And as you scroll, it would merge into, like, it would do a close-up on that window of the little model on the screen.
Yeah.
And as you went into the apartment, it would merge into the video fall of the dust falling down.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you keep scrolling, and it comes back out. And then, like, where the security guard and the other lady were climbing over debris,
mm-hmm.
as they climbed over, first responders were showing up. And so there's video of them. And it did the same thing with them from the body cam of the police officer showing them climbing over rubble. And it just merged right into the video, and then it merges out as you scroll. It was really chilling, almost.
Well, it's more like you're right there in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And a girl that was in a hotel next door, I think, she was sitting out next to the pool area at 1:20 in the morning.
As one does in Miami.
Yeah, a vacation, you know, whatever. Yeah. She was at a hotel. She heard the sound of the pool deck collapse
mm-hmm.
and walked over. And where she was sitting, she could see into the entranceway that went down into the parking garage, where the road you turn and go down to the parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
So she filmed because there was debris and stuff. Like, she could see where things had collapsed, but it was actually the opposite side of the building from where she was. Her phone was showing, like, 100 feet into the, you know, into the abyss. And so they showed some of that, like, still photo or something from her phone as well. It was a really interesting presentation, and it was still pretty early on that they made that, because they still, like, they didn't have the information about the support column at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Or the pictures of the planters or anything like that. The YouTube video that I linked, he said that he had been talking to reporters at the Miami Herald, and that they gave him those photos that they had gotten from an anonymous source. Well, a confidential informant source that they couldn't give him, you know, who they were. And he said in the video, he said, who knows, by the time this is released, they may have already said this is who our source is. But he's like, I don't know who it was. But so then he had the pictures there that he could explain what was going on with the planters and stuff. So, and his video was about 2 years old. So I'm thinking that they did this, the presentation that I linked, and then kind of after that is when they may have gotten the confidential source that gave them the pictures of those, the support column, yeah, and the planters and stuff.
It's kind of a wonder that it was up for, what, 30 years?
40, 81. So 81 to 2021 is 40 years.
Yeah, that's right.
40. Yeah. And that one lady who passed that had been a member of the board had been living there since the year it opened.
Yeah.
I mean, so I guess I'm assuming her sons that died in there with her, Jay and Frank Kleiman, I think were their names. Mm-hmm. Her name was Nancy Levin. I'm assuming that's where they grew up. I don't know.
Probably.
I mean, that's my best guess.
Why wouldn't it? Because yeah, she'd been there forever.
And then, you know, one of her sons was the one whose wife, new wife, had the son with muscular dystrophy.
Yeah.
That was in the wheelchair. So that's an entire family there. The son, the mom, you know, the stepdad to the son, his brother, and he and his brother's mom.
Wow.
And they were in different apartments. The mom and the brother lived in one, and then Frank and his new wife and the son that was in the wheelchair lived in another apartment.
Gosh, it makes you think.
And they said that there were buildings, like, kind of all over Miami that they were, like, checking after this, and from that time span had problems that were built in that same time span. So they don't know if it was, like kind of corruption on the part of maybe the city planners, not, like, people not strictly enforcing codes, uh-huh, or what. I will say that the man who was supposed to inspect this place when it was built back in the 70s, he was the one that inspected it to make sure that there was the right amount of rebar and stuff and the structural supports and all that stuff. That man had already had a problem with another thing that had that he'd kind of gotten in trouble for, because they found out that it had half the rebar it was supposed to have in it. It was a parking structure.
But he approved it or whatever?
Yeah. And he said on that particular thing, it was a parking garage, and it was like one of the walls that, like, keeps you from falling off the side of the parking garage. And he said since it wasn't a structural component, it wasn't his job. But then other engineers were like, that's BS, because
it is your job,
if
sir,
it can't stop a car, then there's no point in it being there. And it had, like, half the rebar it was supposed to have. And then this, that support column, and that presentation for Miami Herald, I'm telling you, look at it.
I'm definitely going to watch it.
Because the support column had missing rebar, too. It did not have all the rebar that was originally designed for. The parking deck, or the pool deck, had less than it was supposed to have in certain areas, too.
So this guy is the one that approved it, or whatever the
right
word
is. Yeah, he was the one, he was the structural engineer that was, like, signed off on it, basically.
That sounds like a civil suit to me. Yeah. But I can't legally give you
any. This was in the late 70s and early 80s, and he passed away in the 90s.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's why I didn't put his name in here, because I was like, he can't defend himself, and
right,
I'm not going to say.
I got it.
And you can find the information, yeah, by looking for the, you know, if you're interested in it. But it was, the whole thing was just heartbreaking.
Just all of it.
And you think of stuff like this happening in the 70s and 80s. But this was in 2021.
Yeah.
This was less than 5 years ago. And like I said, by the time the finalized report comes out, it will have been almost 5 years. June of 2026 would be 5 years, and they said it should be out in, like, April or May of 2026.
Gosh.
Yeah. So all these people who could have had 5 years of dreams and life,
memories,
and, you know, those little kids, that the one-year-old, they never got to live. and you think of your home as a safe space.
Yeah.
You don't think when you walk into a parking garage or a mall or a hotel or a condo or whatever, apartment building, that it's just going to fall down around you.
Right. And you know, they're more concerned about a hurricane.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about their condo collapsing. They're thinking, right, I make sure I get through this next hurricane or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, y'all need to reinforce these windows and stuff because hurricanes. It's like, the whole thing's from the bottom down is like...
I mean, just think about that. I forgot what the company's name was that came in and did their report.
Their inspection, Mirabito consultation.
And like, literally, they were like, everything needs
to be...
Yeah,
like, there needs to be a lot done. And at that time, that was in 2018, they didn't mention... Like, they mentioned that it needed some structural things, that there were some problems, but they didn't mention, like, the obvious breakdown of, like, the column that mm-hmm. I mentioned in that one photo from 2020. So, apparently, between 2018 and 2020 is when that concrete above that column started having issues and showing signs of punch shear, and the water was coming down and stuff like that. Because right. In 2018, they didn't mention
that. Because they would have definitely noticed that.
Yeah, they would have seen
it. And would have put that in there.
Apparently, there was a building, a DEA building in the 70s. I think it was 1974 that collapsed and killed 7 people.
Mm-hmm.
And after that is when they set up a law that buildings had to be recertified every 40 years. So the consultation in 2018 was because they had to be recertified. 40 years would have been 2021. So 2018, they looked at the building and they're like, to recertify, this is what you're going to have to do. And they worked on it. The process was just slow because it was a lot of money.
It was a lot of money.
And nobody wants to spend the money. And I didn't go into it with this because it was a lot more, but after this collapse, and they've changed laws now where the recertification has to be sooner and follow-ups and within a certain amount of time and stuff mm-hmm. like that, which is all well and good, except the increased cost means the increased cost goes to the condo owners. And so there are people who cannot afford their homes now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. People who have lived in the same building for 50 years and suddenly...
They like, can't afford it
yeah,
anymore.
If they have to do all this structural support and foundation repair and things like that, that gets it costly. So they're going to pass it on to the homeowners, you know, to the condo people. So, yeah, there are people that, you know, with these new laws and stuff, they're like, I don't know what I'm going to do now. They can't afford their condos anymore.
Oh.
But the recertification process is true for... I think it's maybe buildings of a certain height, because it was talking about condos and hotels and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when it happened, vaguely.
I don't have a memory of this one.
And so I, like, thought of it off the top of my head. I was like, oh, yeah, I want to look that up. And because I was thinking, oh, it's been 4 years. I'm sure that they'll have the reasons now. And it's still not ready.
They're not ready for yeah. that, yeah. Not with all that...
There's so much testing.
Incredibly long list of things that they're doing.
Yeah. Because they test, like, I mean, every support column, every slab of concrete, they're going to test.
Well, they have to test everything.
The strength
literally.
Of it and the durability of it and how much it degraded and, like.
The composition, yeah, like, what
is
actually
the rebar
made of
different areas of the building and, you know.
Can't even imagine how long that actually.
Yeah. Well, apparently.
Imagine being a person working yeah. on that.
That's got to be overwhelming. They had, like, somewhere it listed, it was, like, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of pounds of rubble
yeah.
was moved to the site, like, nearby or something after as they were pulling people out and cleaning the rubble out. The rubble was being transported.
So that they could do
so
their
they could
testing
start,
and
yeah,
all that
start
stuff.
Start the investigation and analysis of everything.
Oh, my gosh. This just reminds me of, the plane crashes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
When they find the wreckage and they take it to like a big hangar and,
right, and
lay out every single
everything.
Piece
yeah.
and
yeah.
identify it and all that.
Mm-hmm.
What a story.
Yeah. My heart goes out. I feel so bad for the people that had to wait a month to find out what was going on. I mean, even hours and days of not knowing where your loved one was, you know.
Yeah.
There were people who were out of town, like, that just weren't. There was and I think I linked it as well, a graphic of each floor of the building and each apartment, and it showed the names of the victims for each apartment.
Oh my god.
And some of them, they either didn't have the information, because this was something that was, like, right after as well. It came out in, like, I think the fall of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them, it just didn't have information for. Other ones, it was, like, resident was out of town. Resident was away. And it was, like, what the odds? Like, you know, one night out of the year that you are not there.
Or the one night, like, that couple that you are there.
Yeah, that you are there. Yeah, her family owned the condo, so they stayed. They were going to stay for a night.
First responders that are responding.
Yeah. And they were a young couple, the ones that, like, they're...
Were there for just, like, one night.
It was like she was 24, he was 26, or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
They had just gotten married. Yeah. It's so sad. And people who lost parents, kids, sisters... You know,
entire families.
But I found the information about climate change interesting too, because that's kind of scary. I mean, climate change affects everything. So, but
well, and it being on the coast, like, that's always kind of scary just to even think about building anything. I mean,
right?
We've all gone to the beach wherever,
yeah,
and you stay in a big hotel or just a house or whatever, but.
Right.
Then you see, like, with a hurricane coming through, how fast things can just be swept away.
Oh, yeah, just knocked over like it's nothing. And one scientist said that the foundation and stuff, like, he was like, you can build a high-rise in the middle of the ocean.
Right.
Like, it, you know, we have a way of guarding against these things. So, there are ways to do it. It just, you know... Basically, you have to do it the right way.
Yeah.
Like, whether the seawater underneath caused any issues or not, there's always, like, humidity. There's always salt in the air. When you're at the beach, you know, the windshield of your car gets salty looking, because of the mist and the rain and the humidity.
Right.
And that stuff's just in the air. So the stuff just has to be watched over and checked. And the cracks and stuff that were showing were signs that something was wrong.
Yeah, obviously hindsight, it's 2020, and we know, we're like, duh.
Yeah.
But even then, at that moment.
Yeah, well, even that junior engineer, I mean, they have engineering experience, and they still were just like, I think it's the plants. But if he'd gone downstairs and seen that column, then maybe he would have been like, no, this is bad.
Like, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's something.
Yeah. So, anyway, that is the Surfside Condo collapse.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I hope everybody... I won't say enjoyed that, but found it as interesting as I did.
Indeed, yeah.
And I highly encourage you to look up that presentation from the Miami Herald and the YouTube video. Josh Porter, Building Integrity, is the name of the channel. And again, it's linked in the notes, but it was so interesting.
I'm definitely
And he explained it so well.
Watch both of those.
Yeah.
Watch, read, whatever.
Yeah. They're both really interesting. And the graphic of the floor-by-floor of where the victims were is just chilling.
That's so heartbreaking.
You just never know. You just never know. Some of them, it's luck. So hopefully, maybe I'll do one that's a little less sad next time.
Yeah, maybe we'll
I'll do a spooky again or
something. Spooky's fun.
Yeah.
Maybe a survival story?
Maybe, yeah. Survival. Survival's good. So,
something? I don't know.
But until then, we'll talk to you guys next time, I guess.
See you guys later.
Yes. Bye.
Watch for deer.
Bye.
Bye.